Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
All right, you are welcome along. Last night we were at the beautiful Stella Theatre in Rathmines for the latest Off the Ball Roadshow. With thanks to HeinekenRugbyClub.com, we had Keith Wood, Brian O'Driscoll, Bagman Supreme, Patrick O'Reilly, aka Ralla, and Warren Gatland was there too. Obviously, we talked about the Lions. We talked about the decision to drop Brian O'Driscoll in 2013, all of which we're going to play over the next hour or two. We're just going to jump ahead a little bit here, though, and play you some good stuff from the end of the night. Needless to say, we talked about Warren's time in charge of Ireland and his relationship with Eddie O'Sullivan. We've been on to both Eddie and Donal Lennon, who are both key players in what you're about to hear. They remember things a little bit differently. We'll give you their side after this. But first, here's Warren's take.
Okay, so one thing just before we get into this, a word of warning. There's some fairly strong language throughout this. So if you've got kids listening or if you're not into that sort of thing, this might not be for you. Otherwise, enjoy.
Your last season is the year of the foot and mouth. You win 4 out of 5 games. We're 15, 14 points up against the All Blacks with 20 minutes left to go, and they win by 14 points. And then you get clipped 2 days later or 1 day later.
A few weeks later, yeah.
It was a few weeks, okay, yeah. But it was immediately after a season where you finished second in the championship. Why did that happen?
No, we'd won 9 out of 11 games that year, so. Look, I wanted to take the team to 2003 to the World Cup, and I was going to finish then, so it didn't happen. I've always been a great believer in what will be, and I was disappointed at the time, but one door closes and another opens, and I got a chance, you know, to end up going to London to Wasps. So it was a great opportunity that I had there, fantastic experience. Like I said, we'd won 9 out of 11. We should have won the Grand Slam. We lost away to
Scotland.
You know, and that that was in a game that we dominated territory and possession, and it was disappointing. They scored a couple of tries, and we had good performances in the rest of the game. So, look, you know, the conversation I think I had with it was in the old Berkeley Court at that time with Philip Brown, and I can't remember who the other old bastard was, but it went like this. Very, very quick. Warren, thanks very much for what you've done for Irish rugby, but we're not going to extend your contract. So that was it. So.
Was it a shock?
It was a little bit, but you know, when I reflect back now, that's part of professional sport, and
there's an argument to be made that it's the making of you. But before we get to that bit, because the story obviously ends with 10.5 trophies, so it's not exactly a bad thing, right? But it is interesting for us, because I think this might be the first time that you guys have spoken about this on the same stage, or certainly sharing a platform. There's been a lot of speculation about what happened around that time. It's been dubbed the Night of the Long Knives. Eddie O'Sullivan has spoken about it in his book. One of the things he puts the difficulties that you had down to was your unwillingness to play the politics game, that the Blazers would be at events and you wouldn't go and say hello to them, you wouldn't play that game. He mentions an incident in a lift where there's 6 or 7 of them and you're kind of ignoring them. And in a way, in retrospect, I don't think that's the worst thing, you know? But ultimately, it cost you your job. Or did it?
I don't know. I mean, I'll tell you a story that I've never repeated, and I haven't even told the person this. So we selected the team to play... to play Scotland, and in the team was Ronan Nagara to start at 10, and at midnight that night I get a knock on my door, and it's Eddie and Brian O'Brien, and Eddie says to me, I think we've made a mistake at 10, and I said, oh, okay, he said, I think we should look at and change the 10s around and pick David Humphreys, and I said, do you really think that? And I said, he said, yeah, I think we've made a mistake there. I said, okay, right. So we changed the team sheet. The team has been announced the next day. And so we put David Humphreys to start 10. I think Kieran Dawson started 7, and that was another debatable selection. So the next day we name David Humphreys at 10 and we leave Ronan Ngara out. And later that day, Ronan Ngara comes to me and says, I'm pretty disappointed about being left out of the team and not being selected. I've spoken to Eddie, and Eddie said to me, at the end of the day, you were the coach and you had the final say. So, and I never said anything to Ryan. I've never ever told him that story. And you know, so you know those.
What did you say to Eddie?
I didn't say anything to Eddie in the end. You know, so we struggled. We struggled from a personal point of view in terms of a relationship, but
from the start.
That's the first time I've heard that story. I will say that subsequently I've had 10 conversations with Eddie where he has changed his selection at night time. He'd wake up in the morning and said, we've made a mistake, we're going to change the selection, we're going to do something else. I think that would have been par for the course for him. But yeah, that to Rog, that's tough to take. Mm. And why didn't you say that to
Rog?
No, to Eddie. Because I for me, that's an incredibly interesting backstory because I didn't get on with you at that stage either. I thought you went unbelievably quiet for the last 6 months. And actually, interestingly, for the last 6 months of Eddie's tenure, I thought he went unbelievably quiet, as in not taking advice. It's get all the information in, but almost clamming up a little. Because for the last 6 months of that period of time, I thought you clammed up unbelievably.
Yeah, possibly, I don't know. We were doing reviews at the time and things with guys on the board. I found that frustrating that you'd go in every Wednesday after a game and you'd go into the RFU offices and you'd meet around a table and you'd be talking to guys who hadn't watched the video, hadn't seen the game. They were talking about their own experiences, players from the 20 years ago. I just found that incredibly frustrating from a coach reviewing stuff, you know.
That kept going till Declan Kidney.
I know, yeah.
Only Joe was the last one to put paid to that.
That was put paid before Joe got the job. That was taken out of it. And that this review wouldn't be part of what the coaches were having to deal with. Yeah. Which was crazy. On a Friday night.
Whether it happened in advance of Joe or Joe coming in and saying it, one way was Joe wasn't going
to
do it.
It got to the point on the Friday night where you'd have to explain your tactics, is that true?
Oh, it was just absolutely ridiculous. You know, you go on a Friday and you'd go up there and be someone from the committee and you know, you'd get there and say, what's your game plan tomorrow? Are you playing a rucking game or a continuity game? I don't even understand that question, so I don't even got no idea. And then the committee...
Are you playing warm ball?
Yeah. And then the committee guys say, what are you expecting from your 15 tomorrow? And what are you expecting from your 9? And I was going, oh, my God, what am I dealing with here? It was incredibly frustrating from a coaching point of view. But, I was lucky enough. I learned a lot in those experiences. I was lucky, you know, going to board meetings every month and experiencing that from a political point of view. And like I said, those 4 years and the experience I had, you know, playing and coaching Galwegians and coaching Connacht, 4 years with Ireland were, you know, incredibly valuable from a very young age. And I learned a lot about myself and a lot about, you know, implementing and putting things in place for the future, definitely. So.
So you obviously hadn't picked Eddie to be your backs coach. That was a decision that was made.
No, it wasn't. That's wrong. I mean, Eddie at the time was available, and in fairness to the union, they just said, go ahead, go and talk to him. I met him in Bunratty Castle, I think it was, and we had a coffee and I had a chat to him and... in fairness to the union, they said it's completely your decision.
Okay, so it was your call.
It was my call. I had a lot of friends and a lot of people saying, don't touch him with a barge pole. And I just thought to myself, you know, I think I've got the ability to get on with people and relate to people and hopefully, you know, I've always said that technically I think he's been a good coach and a very good coach, and I just thought that... That, you know, even though if we had differences, that hopefully the relationship can can work from a positive point of view. So you know, and unfortunately it didn't. But you know,
quickly was that straight away? Did it unravel, or did it like take a bit of time?
No, it definitely took a little bit of time. And Donald Lennon said to me the day that Brian O'Driscoll, he told me this a number of years later, and when Brian scored the three tries and we beat France in Paris the first time for 20 or 27 years, and, you know. And yeah, it was absolutely outstanding that day. And Donald said to me quite a few years ago, he just said, I want to tell you a story about that day. He said, I've never told you this. And I said, oh, what's that? And he said, we're in the change rooms and we're celebrating, everyone's having a good time, and Eddie was sitting in the corner, and Donald went over to him and said, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you celebrating? And Eddie said to Donald, oh, this means Gatlin's going to be in the job for another 2 years. So it kind of, that when I got told that, Donald told me that story, it kind of summed up a few things. And you know,
he was a year out.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Right. Holy shit. That's tension.
Yeah, that's serious. Yeah. It's...
Yeah, those are things that I've kept to myself. I just, yeah, you've heard a couple of things from me tonight that I've never expressed, and yeah, you've asked the questions. But like I said, that great experience for me, massive learning curve. And I took those experiences from Ireland on to, you know, the experiences I had with Wasps and Waikato and with Wales and hopefully with the Lions.
Well, we've spoken about this before, about the change from that period of time to the next period of time. And you had a particular issue around defence coach. You'd gone on the Lions tour and Phil Larder had been there, and you'd been like, yeah, this is fucking amazing. These guys are great.
Yeah, I just thought it was a shift of the game, and that's like that's why when you've said what you said there, that was the first that I've heard of that, and I knew it was very cold and frosty, but it was very hard. Like, we weren't even talking at that stage, and you remember about 2 or 3 days after I got married, we met in Killaloe about trying to get a defensive coach, and I was very keen, having seen that this was it going forward, and I just felt at that stage you seemed to be resistant to any change and any conversation, because you'd literally from, I won't say that summer, but that year, it was almost, well, for me as captain, it was like almost impossible to get through to you. So ultimately, when it came down to the end of it, and like asked 3 years beforehand, who do you think is coach, or do we need a new coach? And I'm saying, well, I'm not keen on Gatti, because I think he's resistant to it. And this is a great bunch of lads, some really, really good like fantastic backs and able to score, able to play, but we're not seeming to move on at the present moment in time. And I remember being asked that question and answering it honestly, which I'd answer here as well in the same fashion. But at that stage, I was barely talking to you at all. And we, in all those
why
matches
did, why
in the
did that
autumn,
happen, though?
Well, I'm just saying. I'm. But I had no idea that, you know, at that stage either, because we were trying to, I think, have conversations of what do we do to change and what everything. And I, at that time, and it's funny, because and that's why I reference it to Eddie O'Sullivan 4 years or 5 years afterwards. In the last 6 months of his, I remember having a chat with Eddie about, you know, looking at different things, and he just wasn't open to anything at all. And I don't know whether that is the beginning of the end or that causes the end. But for me, it didn't come across as being a big surprise. And it wasn't an ultimatum, you know, get rid of Gatland or anything like that. And there was no night of the long knives. And that, and you've said that to me recently, and I said, I don't. There was no concerted effort or anything like that. But
no one knew it. I mean, there was only three or four people who made the decision. There was no one who knew what was going on. I mean, I tried to bring in Matt. Who was the Leinster coach? Matt?
Williams.
I tried to bring him in as a defensive coach, but that didn't. That was knocked on the head, because I thought some of the defensive stuff at the time that he was doing was pretty good, but you know, that was blocked at the time. So,
but it just, for me, it felt at that stage almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It tightened up.
The reading that we've been doing over the last couple of weeks, when we knew this was coming, was the sense that somehow Lons and what happened in the World Cup is this cloud that hangs on for ages afterwards, and that there's no rescuing the relationship. So it seems like this is, let me just finish that point before. It seems like they had made their mind up that they wanted rid of you. And so naturally, as a young man, you're like, screw these guys. You become, naturally, I would suspect, a bit defensive about it. The trouble continues to grow. And when they get their chance, they take you out. That last 6 months is kind of a natural response of somebody who seems like that the writing is on the wall.
We'd had one of our better Six Nations, though, had we?
Well, it was you know, a kind of all over the shop because of the
foot and mouth.
Foot and mouth. It wasn't, for me, it wasn't even like Lance was unbelievably hurtful for all of us, and I would say every single one of us. You know, that we go out, and it isn't that we lost to Argentina, it was that we just didn't play. And we climbed up on that day. And I think we've all put our hands up in terms of that. It was a very hurtful thing. For players, I don't think that was
for the IRFU, though.
Yeah.
I think that it's at that point the IRFU were like, okay, let's find somebody else. Oh, well, let's put him in. And Eddie was their guy who they wanted from a couple of years out.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that's probably true. I think Eddie was at some stage going to be Irish coach, and it was decided that was the time.
I don't think from Lons, though. I think it was
not from Lons. No.
It's after that. You kind of
because identified. I think after the recovery from Lons, with all the new breed coming through, that Six Nations after was winning in Paris, you know, beating Scotland, who we hadn't beaten very often. We got beaten badly by England, we beat Italy. So 3 wins in a Six Nations was a pretty big deal to us at the time. So I think that dispelled a lot of what had gone on in Lons. Yeah. And I was only a newcomer to this. So
We'd finished second, I think, 2 years in a row, and just on points difference was the difference. And we'd won 9 out of 11 games. And I mean, I have a different take on that. I think, and in fairness, look, I know Eddie had an offer on the table to go back to the USA, and he had a contract in front of him, and I think that was a tipping point. I don't think that the union wanted to risk losing Eddie as a coach, and so decided to make that decision. I think there was nothing about any history or about the year. Like I said, we'd won 9 out of 11 games. I think that was the defining moment, the fact that he had another offer from someone else. They knew he had a contract. I think it was reasonably well publicised at the time that there was a potential. And you know, whether that was bargaining power or not, I don't know. And so they made the decision. And for me, it kind of, like, I reflect back on it, and it for all of us, it ended up being working out great. I mean, it was great for me, because I look back on the opportunities I had and the experience. Chance, I probably would have gone back to New Zealand. I got a chance to go and live in London for 4 years and take a team that was bottom of the Premiership to win 3 Premierships and a Heineken Cup and a Challenge Cup, and then go back to New Zealand and to be successful back there, and then to come to Wales. So kind of, you learn from those, and you learn from those past experiences, and you learn, and you go, right, what did I learn from my time in Ireland? And I learned from my time in Ireland in terms of that, what was the relationship was fractious, and there was the distrust of that. So for me, the whole thing, right, next, wherever I go, is to build a team around you that you want to challenge each other, but there's a total trust element. And kind of that was my next stage from my whole thing, because, and I've always said, you know, in terms of with Eddie as a coach, I thought technically he was excellent, and I thought he had a lot of good ideas, but for whatever reason, you know, just the relationship, it didn't work. I always questioned his man management and the way that he did things, and for me, you know, I'm proud of what I've achieved as a coach from that experience and going on and learning from, you know, hopefully learning from the mistakes that you make to improve yourself and to get better.
Yeah, he's answered what I was going to ask, because you said to me about 3 years after you left Ireland that it was the best thing that ever happened to you, because it shook up what you actually thought. And ultimately, was that the impetus for you to change? You changed a lot. Did you do less coaching immediately afterwards?
No, more.
More. And you brought in more coaches with you as well?
Not initially. I mean, I went to Wasps. It was like a clean sheet. Was starting again and putting things in place. And so it was just myself and Sean Edwards. And then we set up an analysis team. And then we got the gym. And I got Craig White and set up a proper fitness thing. And it was all about putting the infrastructure. And that's what we were trying to do with Ireland at the time, and we started that, and we think we got some consistency there, and we were looking at conditioning and how important that was. And I can remember at the time at Wasps, we had Joe Worsley, whose contract was up, and I think it was a £150,000-£160,000 contract that was up, and I went to a board meeting. I was taking a bit of a risk at the time. I got Chris Wright, who was the owner, and I said, Chris, I'm happy not to recontract Joe Worsley if you give me that money to spend on a gym and strength and conditioning coaches, analysis, food, nutrition, get all that infrastructure right behind the scenes, because to me that was more important long term than one player. And if we got everything right behind the scenes and did that, that would have a long-term impact and be much more beneficial to the team. And I've kind of really lived and worked on that philosophy in terms of the importance of the people behind the scene, but also the structure and the facilities. And you know, for us, if anyone ever gets an opportunity to go and have a look at the facilities that we have in Wales, they are by far, I think, the best facilities in world rugby. They're absolutely outstanding because we've invested, you know, heavily. At the moment we have a gym, in fairness to the union, they're just going to spend another £1 million on another gym and a wrestling area and stuff, and we were lucky we've got an altitude chamber and indoor training area, cryotherapy and stuff, and to me those things, and a full medical centre with everything as well, so I'm incredibly lucky. But I think they're important for the whole team and the environment, and particularly the way that the game's gone professional.
And that's your legacy then at Wales. Just one last point on the Ireland thing, not to labour it anymore, because it's been pretty amazing, but did you recognise what Keith said about the last 6 months gone quiet? Or
no, I can't.
It can't be a nice work environment when you're walking in going, I don't really like that guy, and he has to give the team talks to half my team. This is...
Yeah, no, I don't. I don't really have a recollection of that kind of. You know, I just, like I said, it was a strange last year in terms of that.
Did you hate going to work and then actually love the bits at the job?
No, I didn't. I enjoyed it. Like I said, I mean, I look back on that year we won 9 out of 11 games. We were, 21-9 up against the All Blacks, and we weren't able to hold out someone like Jonah Lomu, who came back, but was. It was a great performance, and we lost a game against Scotland and the foot and mouth that we should have won. Beat England at home, beat Wales and Cardiff 36-6, beat France and that game. So I look back and go, you know, was a incredibly positive year, you know. So and that kind of was for me was, I think, within being let go by the RFU, I had 8 job offers within 2 weeks. Some of it was to go back to New Zealand, some was in France, you know, one was Wasps, and one was in Wales, and I can remember turning around to my wife and says, no fucking way I'm going to Wales. So, you know, that was... but, you know, like I said to I'm a great believer in learning from the experience. I'm a great believer in what will be. I don't plan ahead. I'm not thinking about, like, for us it's the next 2 years, and then I'm gonna take a break after the World Cup. But I'm not even thinking about what I'm gonna do afterwards. Something will come along, and it'll be the right time. Yeah, you know, I'll hopefully be at the right place at the right time to be able to do that. And that's kind of the way that I've sort of lived my life like that.
I wanted to ask you, just moving on from that now, when we were talking about the bad taste being left in your mouth living back in New Zealand, if the All Black job came along, obviously it's something that you'd jump at, or is that in your way of thinking, or has it been?
It's never been in my way of thinking. My whole thing is that to do the All Blacks, I think there's a policy, you've got to coach Super Rugby. And so for me, it would be the next, if Wales do well in the next 2 years and do well in the World Cup, and we've done well in the World Cups, in previous World Cups, because we've had that 3 or 4 months together. And the hardest thing about international rugby is just the limited preparation time. You get the team for 1 or 2 weeks and you've got to prioritise and you've got to do things, and you know, hopefully you can get, you know, particularly in the Six Nations, it's a tournament about momentum. You get a little bit of momentum and a little bit of luck, and you know, you can, it can just build up. You lose a couple of games and it can go completely the other way, and we've all experienced a little bit of that. And the great thing about the World Cup stuff is that you get that 3 months period together, you can get your conditioning right, you can focus on your skill development and really, really doing a lot of in-depth coaching and preparation to the World Cup. And that's why we think we've done well in the last couple of World Cups. And for us, ironically, we'll have a really experienced team, but the age profile will be very similar to Ireland at the moment, but it'll be perfect for, you know, hopefully being successful for Wales for a World Cup around about a mean age of about 30, 31, which is kind of that experience that you're looking for. And then if we do well in the World Cup, I'll go back home. Maybe a Super Rugby opportunity comes along, and then if you're successful for a couple of years of Super Rugby, then something else might come along. But it's not, I'm not planning, oh look, I want to be the All Black coach. I mean, everyone keeps saying, you know, trying to put that out there. Those things happen as a result of what you've done in the process as you go along. And if you do something and you're successful, then other doors open and other opportunities open. And like I said, I mean, I'd like to think that my experience in Ireland for those 4 years, having some continuity, bringing some good players through, building a team, putting some infrastructure in behind the things, having some success, that opened the opportunity and for other doors along the way.
Since the Lions, you've said under no circumstances would you do it again, and then you backtracked a couple of weeks ago. What are you actually feeling about that now?
Well, no, I was, again, you know, I was honest at the time there. I said, you know, coming back there and Sean had made a few comments, and I went, geez, you know, the Lions, and obviously with Brian's 2013, There's no pressure on a player being a Lion. This is my, all the pressure's on the coaching, because you can go on a Lions tour as a player and fail, and you've got the security then to go back and be back to your club and back to your international team. You fail as a coach on a Lions tour and everything comes down on you. And in 2013, when I was asked to apply for the job, to be Lions coach to go to Australia, they said to me, I was asked the question, so what, Warren, what's the goal of going to Australia in 2013? And obviously they were expecting the answer, look, I want to go to Australia and win the test series. And I said, to be honest, my goal as coach of the Lions in 2013 is to be the first coach that doesn't lose his job within 12 months of a Lions tour, because that's what's happened to the previous 4 Lions coaches. No security being a Lions coach. You fail on a Lions tour, your security the next 12 months is under massive jeopardy. So it's a real risk doing that. And so,
yeah, I wouldn't say there's no pressure. I would still put it in for the Lions. A different pressure, not a career pressure or job pressure. But like I look back and you try not to regret too much, you know, when the thing is over and done with and you can't do anything about it anymore. But the thing that, like, makes me miserable is losing the Lions series in Australia. I mean, I actually can't get over that. We should have won it, and we were a really good team. Now, they were world championship team themselves, but we should have. We had a really good team, and we didn't get it. Like, I find that as bad as it could possibly be is coming back as a player. But admittedly, my job isn't at risk at the end of it.
So. You know, Graham Henry loses his job within 12 months.
Clive Woodward has to take up football.
Yeah, Clive Woodward goes. Ian McGeeken, same thing happened with Geach as well. So, yeah, it's...
He just got the joke
there
over there.
There is pressure.
there is a massive amount of pressure, yeah, and the spotlight's on you. But the ironic thing is that it's kind of like...
The pleasure.
why we're involved in sport, because you love those challenges and you love those pressures. And you say to me, and someone said, you know, when Wales win the World Cup in 2019, and that's when I said when. And they said, Warren, would you reconsider doing the Lions? Well, then you might reconsider then doing the Lions to South Africa. Because
it's only South Africa. Yeah. You definitely beat them.
And that's the you know, me sort of being honest. But there's a cynical side of me that feels like saying, well, let someone else do it and let them realise, you know, how tough a job it is to do it and see what happens, you know. But it is a hard job to say no to. It's for the players, it's the pinnacle. It's, you know, for the coaches, it's a massive challenge. It's very, very hard to say no to.
And I don't think everybody fully understands or appreciates that until we actually talk to you guys about the pressure and the joy that you feel, because it is such an alien concept in world sport that, like, it's only you people who fully, truly experience it and live it that fully appreciate how much it means to you.
And yeah, I've been lucky enough to... I've seen, to me, that I think has a significant impact, having put it on and experience. I've seen two jerseys really make a difference when the players put on. One's the All Black jersey and the other's the Lions jersey. And the impact that it has when a player puts that on and wears it in the change room, there is no doubt that you can see that it has an impact. And I'm not taking away from how proud the players are to put an Irish jersey on or a Welsh jersey or an English jersey or whatever, but there are two jerseys that I've seen have that impact when the players put that on and they wear it, you know. And so, and to me, there's no doubt. It's kind of like I said, you know, I joke, it's why my wife makes me keep one of those All Black jerseys under my bed at night, because you put that.
It's after hours with Warren Gatland. Sorry, yeah. Well, it has been unbelievable, honestly, so far from Warren Gatland. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for him.
All right. Unbelievably interesting stuff there from Warren Gatland on his time as Ireland coach, his relationship with the IRFU, and most interestingly, perhaps, his take on Eddie O'Sullivan. As I said, we've been on to Eddie and Donal Lenihan, and they both wanted to make it clear that the conversation Warren was referring to didn't happen in the changing room immediately after the French game in 2000. Eddie was obviously as delighted with the result as Warren and the players were, since he played a fairly significant role in engineering the win as the backs coach and assistant coach at the time. We are going to play you some more highlights from the night in a bit, and obviously you can listen to it, or even better, watch the video on offtheball.com, Facebook and YouTube, and all our digital channels. Remember to subscribe and sign up for notifications, so whenever we go live with that good quality content, you'll get a notification pinged straight to your phone. Now, tonight and every night this week, one listener will win unlimited golf for a year at the renowned Christy O'Connor Jr. designed Championship 18-hole golf course at Palmerston House Estate in County Kildare. To be with the chance of winning, identify our mystery voice who's nervous, like me, about piling on the pounds over Christmas.
I will get fat.
Text the word golf along with your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cent. We'll draw a winner later on in the show. I wouldn't be too worried about his body. Check out palmerstonhouse.ie for more details on memberships for 2018. Now, after the break, we're going to lighten the mood a little bit and hear some stories from legendary bagman Paddy Ralla O'Reilly.
Off the ball
on News Talk. In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.